So, did you happen to read either one of the chapters? So what did you think about turning love problems into growth? If you read any of that, what's the basic idea, if you remember?
We all have problems, childhood issues that we need to work through, and we are often attracted to the people who will help us work through.
Susan, I couldn't say it better. That's exactly correct. It's a strange paradox that in romantic attraction, which we're going to cover just in a little bit, we have shadows and templates of neural pathways from our parents because they're highly influential in our life. So we didn't grow up in a vacuum. We grew up in a relationship context, and we're influenced by that context. Nothing wrong with that. Our parents are imperfect. That's fine. But we're left with imprints, and we are naturally attracted to an opposite, and that person has some shadows of the imprints that are familiar to us. I didn't say they were exact, but we wouldn't choose this person except that we have some familiarity in our brain. Now, this is a good thing because it's familiar and it helps us feel really comfortable with this person. But at the same time, it gives us a chance that we're choosing the very person to act out some of our unresolved issues with, the very person we chose. And that's just the way it happens. It's a unique growth experience. So what we're going to see is in romantic attraction, it's not about completion. You're not choosing a person to complete you. So shock of shocks, it initially seems that way, that you're marrying an opposite and the two are coming together to make a completion. But what the research and anecdotal and time-honored evidence show us is the very qualities that brought you two together or attracted or were attractive are the very qualities that later you will complain about that are causing you great irritations in your life. So they initially drew you together, and then they did a double turn and said, they irritate you. And so the shift that I'm advocating that we're going to see is you can no longer think of completion. You're actually going to have to develop the less developed side of you. You cannot draw it from the other person. Okay? You can't draw it from them to complete you.
There's also a note about a call to empathy. So understanding your mate, where they're coming from, and then, as you said, the call to change, to grow.
That's right.
So taking responsibility for the piece of you that needs to grow to meet your mate's needs.
Yeah, I don't like to think of it as meeting your mate's needs. Okay? I like to think of wishes, wants, and preferences. Your mate doesn't have needs. They have wishes, wants, and preferences, but I will allow language. I know what we mean. We're meeting some of their desires. How's that? Because we love them. We can't cure their childhood wounds, but we can meet them at a profound level for some of their desires that mean most to them. That's what you're trying to say. This is why one of your hugest, biggest, most important takeaways from all of this is that the best way to create positive, constructive, wonderful, life-enhancing relationships is to make a shift towards your own personal growth. Focus less on your spouse, focus more on you. Be the best person you can be is the best way to enhance and create a constructive, positive, real-life relationship. Make a shift away from drawing everything from your spouse. Make a shift in your personal growth to bring something to the relationship. The universe is designed for this. We can cooperate with it, or we can fight it. You won't win if you fight it. But everybody has a very difficult time. They think they can improve their relationship by constantly talking to their spouse or the significant other to influence, correct, teach them, and change them into the person they want and wish them to be. It won't work. Even if you get their cooperation initially, I will show you tonight, the universe is designed to set up that they will oppose you. It's designed that way. I'm sorry. This is why I say for couples that I'm working with, I want them to understand everything is going right. It's not going wrong. But they think it's going wrong. Because they're having power struggles, conflicts, tug of wars, each trying to influence and counter-influence the other. It's not going wrong. It's going right. It's supposed to lead to that to make a shift. If the other way was working, you'd still be working. You wouldn't have power struggles. So, just a reminder, in class two, I'm trying to focus our attention on attraction, connection, and desire, because I think it is just profound that at the heart and core of marriage, we have desire, attraction, and connection. If we cease to have that, I know that we have an arrangement. I'm not discounting that. We have a civil marriage. I'm not discounting that. I'm not discounting the kind of glue that holds people together. But what distinguishes this from committed roommates? Attraction. So you really like this person. Connection. Your heart feels connected to them. And desire to be close. This is at the heart and core of marriage. This is why I really believe that God, or if you prefer Mother Nature, I don't like that, I don't like to deify Mother Nature, it's nature, places in a long-term emotionally committed relationship sexuality. Most of the couples in my office try to avoid that. They don't know how to channel it in a long-term committed relationship. How do we keep desire, attraction, connection alive? Answer, personal growth has to occur to keep these things alive. We'll see why tonight. So I find it amazing that what separates marriage from just a long-term committed roommate situation is attraction, desire, and connection. You know, this is the same on our spiritual journey. If you have a spiritual journey with God, higher power, what distinguishes good behavior from simply morally generated good behavior, try hard, be a good person? What distinguishes it on the spiritual journey is your heart connection with the God of love. It flows out of love. Once you lose that connection, it's just another set of rules. It's behavioral modification. Trust me, true spirituality is not about morality. It's about a purification, transformation, and love in the heart, out of which springs good behavior, because we want to be good people. Not reversed. It's never reversed. It's about love first in the heart. The same is true in marriage. So this keeps us honest. It keeps us in touch. And I said last week, it invites the best in us. And frankly, marriage, if we allow it and cooperate with it, will make us really good people. It'll make us really good people. We don't have to fight it. So our focus is keeping attraction, connection, desire alive in a long-term, emotionally committed relationship. That's what we're trying to talk about. How do you do that? Fact, which is what we're discussing tonight. Fact. The foundation for attraction, connection, and desire in a short-term relationship is not the same. It is fundamentally different than the foundation in a long-term emotionally committed relationship. That's a fact. So the foundation which produces short-term powerful relationships is fundamentally different. The two are not the same. They're apples to oranges. You're going to see why tonight. But everybody thinks in marriage, let's go back to exactly how we began. You can't. I'm sorry. That was then. This is now. I know what you mean. Let's grab some of the passion back. We can do that. We can do that. But its foundation and what produces it is different than when you first met. You're not the same people as when you first met 10, 15, 20 years ago. You're not the same person. We can't go back and produce it exactly. It was contextual. You're going to see why. But we can keep passion alive, and I do not believe that passion, desire, and long-term committed marriage are oxymorons and don't go together. I believe they can go together. Okay? I really believe that. But some theorists say, no, marriage is marriage. It's boring, it's dull, it's commitment. I get so tired of that. Marriage is not commitment to commitment. I don't believe in commitment to commitment. It won't float the boat. I believe that desire, connection, and passion can be alive in a long-term relationship. So, we see a shift has to occur because of the nature of desire. And this is what we talked about a little bit last week. Remember, when the subject is looking for its object of desire, initially the object holds all the power. The object wows you. A spouse or a dating relationship, the other person is the object of your desire and it produces good feelings in you. But you see, we have to shift away from the object is the active element wowing you and the subject is passive, receiving it, being wowed. We have to shift that the subject becomes active, not passive, in a long-term relationship. This is what I was saying last week. You got to level the playing field. Initially, the subject is just receiving. It's not doing anything. It's taking it in. Wow me. The object is providing all of the good feelings. Now, initially, the object is happy to do this. The object loves being the object by providing. Guess what happens? Not so long if this keeps going on. Is the object getting more enhanced and glad to do everything to produce these good feelings? Or is the object getting tired? So what we're going to see tonight is this is called borrowed functioning. The object is the donor. The subject is the recipient. The donor is glad to donate for a while. I'll do whatever you want, honey. I'm as happy to do this for you. So initially, even those little quirky things about the other person, you're just so cute when you do that. Now give it about 3 years, and what now what's being said? It ain't so cute anymore, and you just irritate the crud out of me. Stop it! Well, you used to think that was so cute. Well, it's not funny anymore. So this is natural. Everything's going right when this happens. So the subject was providing nothing. The object was providing everything. The subject is an empty vessel. Fill me. The object is the satisfying source. And for a while is glad to fill. For a while. However, as I said, unfortunately, but fortunately, this is the way the universe is designed. The clock is ticking. This can't go on this way forever. So it's time limited. It's not bad. I'm for it. It's wonderful. as long as we understand its purpose is unique and specific and time limited. It's wonderful. Even if we capture some vestige moments of this, I'm fine with that. Just remember, it's not meant to sustain long term. We create another foundation for long term, which is what we're trying to get to. Saturation leads to boredom. I don't care how good a thing is, if you get enough of it and you don't provide anything to it, A, do you respect it? You got it for free. You didn't do anything for it. You'll like it initially because you'll love being worshipped. After a while, it's boring. And actually, it produces master-slave love-hate. I love you and I hate you at the same time. And I hate myself. I hate myself for receiving it and nothing. I'm doing nothing to get it. Initially, we think that's wonderful. That's just life. If you were in a graduate program and it didn't challenge you at all and you made straight A's, I guarantee you, you wouldn't respect it. You wouldn't like it. You'd say, I got very little out of it. If you had to work really hard to make a good grade and the best of you came out, you'd find it satisfying. Because now the subject has to get involved. So sooner or later it turns into master-slave love-hate. Can you see that? Everything's going right when this happens. It's not going wrong. This is where we see with time increased emotional swings between these two people, greater moodiness and volatility. Because there are demands on the object, the source, to give more or change. But this produces a counterbalance because the source pushes back and says, I'm not going to do it. This produces a wonderful gridlock power struggle, which is designed to heat everything up. Stay with me. It's designed to heat everything up. Here's my technical lingo. To produce critical mass. More weight, critical mass to make a paradigm shift. So couples in my office will naturally say, and I affirm this statement, I can't go on this way. I say, yay, that's the healthy side in you. I can't be in this relationship this way any longer. To which I want to jump up and go, yay, how long did it take you? When somebody says, I'm done, I'm so done, I go, that's the healthy side in you. The sick side would say, I still think I can do it. No, that's the sick side. I still got enough gasoline in my tank. I still have hope. Give up yet? Never! That's from Home Alone too. You guys give up yet? Never! I want people to give up because it's trying to produce critical mass, endless power struggles, each trying to change the other, increase volatility to make a shift, a desperately needed shift. Everything's going right, but they just don't know it. So I have to help their inner map understand this is matching reality. This is good. Let's adjust your inner map. You're on the right path. So there's increased power struggles and emotional gridlock because now the source pushes back. Now they're gridlocked. Now they have then what a relationship that I call two ticks on a dog and no dog. That make sense? Because they're both drawing off each other with big straws. And each are drawing off the other. And they used to have a source there. Two ticks on a dog. They got no dog. They're just bleeding each other dry. And now the straw is down at the bottom of the milkshake going. And they're trying to draw more. And their tank is empty. And they both know it. Yay, I'm so glad they know it. I want them to be exhausted. I'm worried about the people who come in and say, we're almost getting there. No, you're not getting there. Give up. And then somebody says, well, I'm not a quitter. No, you need to quit. This is not designed to work this way. Okay? Now, why must this shift occur? Please grab onto this. It's my personal conviction. Because the universe, by its very design, is set up to stimulate us to grow. Don't stop protesting the universe. Stop protesting. Grab on and ride with it. Let's ride the wave of change and growth. You can put your rear end down and your paws in front, and we can take a leash and just drag that puppy right across this floor. Because I like to say, you're going down. When you get to the top of that roller coaster on the first hill and it's clicking and then it goes dead silent, I guarantee you, don't push back on the bar. You know why? You're just increasing your own victimization. You're trying to stop something that you can't stop. So just go with it, go forward, scream your head off, and ride the ride. That's what we're designed to do. But everybody in my office wants to find a way out of it. They don't want to grow with it. They say, everything is going wrong, get me back into an easy place. I can't get you back in an easy place. I'm going to help you ride the ride. You'll be happier. Okay? Teleos is a Greek word. It's one of my favorite words. If something is teleological, we mean it has an end point. It's goal-directed. So when we say history is teleological, we mean it's not a random set of chaotic events all jumbled up. We actually mean the universe is going somewhere to an end point. So Freud liked to talk about all behavior is teleological. All behavior has a purpose to it. Now you can scratch your head and go, boy, that didn't make sense. Just because it doesn't make sense doesn't mean it doesn't have a purpose. It's there for a reason. It's purposeful. Teleos is the goal, and in the New Testament, teleos is translated maturity. Our God-designed end point is to grow to the fullness of maturity. Not codependency. Not a diffusion of yourself where you get yourself from everybody else in the room. You don't even have an opinion. Don't have a thought that's your own. Can't manage your own emotions. You're highly reactive, and you can't find the value for anything that you do. That's immaturity. The universe is designed to pull us up to the end goal for which we were designed, to stand on the world on our own two feet and have a great sense of adventure filled with fulfillment, excitement, delight, and joy. Over and over, this is the end point for which we were created. Maturity is a great word. The whole universe is stimulating it, and marriage by its design uniquely is designed to stimulate it. Why fight it? Our response is to recognize the opportunity and cooperate. And as we're going to see, especially next week, we're going to do our relationship Pilates, and we're going to strengthen our inner core. Okay? I didn't say your life goal is to strengthen your spouse's inner core. Okay? Our end goal is to strengthen your own. And you need to do that because you're with somebody who's challenging you every day to strengthen your own inner core. Yay! You picked the exact great sparring partner. designed to stimulate you every day towards growth. Don't you love that? It was magical how you did that. So what I want you to see, especially after tonight, is that by strengthening our inner core, personal growth directly affects our ability to want. Do you know people who, I said it last week, people who don't have an inner core, who are afraid of their own shadow, do not want. Want is scary because they could get hurt. They don't view life as an adventure. They view life as something to be avoided. The more inner core you have, the more adventures and delights and joys you can have. If you think you're going to get that from another human being, you'll get it initially, then it will increase your fear, threat, and insecurity. You'll be less worse off than before you began. It's the truth. If you're waiting for somebody else to provide you for the thrill of your life, if they do, you'll want more of it, and you're more master, slave, and dependent than the day you started. So give it up. It's going to be inside your own core. That's what we're going to develop. Okay? So we can ride the wave so the wave doesn't ride us. You know, focusing on your spouse or your significant other weakens you. Let me say that again. Intensely focusing on the other person to bring something to you weakens you, especially if you're successful at it. So tonight, there's four foundations for desire. I'm not going to really cover lust, not because I'm against it. It's not going to be our topic. We're going to look at romantic love, why it's so powerful. It's designed to lead us towards attachment. That's its design. But I really want to focus on romantic love and the fourth one, which nobody really talks about as a foundation for desire. That is developing, growing, and maintaining a self. The more self you develop, the greater the adventure, the more desire you can have, the more want you can experience. You want more. You should. People who can't want and only want to be wanted are weak people. They live their life hoping to be the object of somebody's intense desire. So what if they get it? What happens then? They have to develop. Okay? So developing and growing and maintaining a self profoundly affects your own personal desire and your ability to find somebody else desirable and attractive. You can be vulnerable. If you can't develop this, you'll hide, run away, and want somebody else to turn you on. That works for a while, but not in marriage. Not for long term. I want you to see the beauty, the design, the incredible power. You still with me?
Yeah.
Any thought before we hit this section? Does it make sense to you? Go ahead.
Yeah, it did make sense. I just wondered if you could compare or contrast it to people maybe starting out with a short-term hedonistic approach to life,
mm-hmm.
and then maybe growing in wisdom and having a more long-term,
mm-hmm.
and maybe, of course, more mature, but
mm-hmm.
is that basically another way of saying it?
Absolutely. Yes, 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 yes. 1,000 times yes. In fact, C.S. Lewis, in a famous prologue to the first book he ever wrote after he became a Christian, 1933, Pilgrim's Regress. In the first book, the preface, he has a whole very famous, one of my favorite, all-time favorite, preface on the nature of longing and desire. And he says he lived out his life in the early part exactly the example that you said. He followed every object that he thought would fulfill him, sex, romance, romantic literature, everything that produced a longing, to see if it would fulfill him. He says, all I can say is I lived out by example. Sadly, I chased everything that I thought would fulfill it, only to find that nothing in this temporal space would fill it to my heart's content. That desire inside of me was designed to lead me to something greater long term. He says, I lived it out by example, and that's his ontological proof for God. That if you really take desire seriously and not back off, it will lead you somewhere. It will show you something very profound. This is a German word, Sehnsucht.
Sehnsucht.
So, romance, I'm mindful of our time, we'll just do a little bit of this. Okay, so here's the experience, and then we'll deconstruct the experience. But you know the experience. Two people meet, they experience a mutual attraction. Well, we understand that out of the hundreds and thousands of people that we could interact with, we're not necessarily initially attracted to everybody, right? A lot of people go right through our filter. But on our filter and our template, there are neural pathways of ways of relating the family we grew up in, which created a neural pathway in the limbic portion of our brain, and it's stored there. And when we come near a person that matches some of that, all the neurons light up because it's familiar. Make sense? Now, I didn't say it was exact. It's a shadow. So it's enough to draw us and be attracted, but enough different that it's not exactly like our family we grew up in. But it has shadows. Also, it's built on complementarity. Complementary. Talkers find listeners. Spenders find savers. Opposites. And they come together. Minimizers find maximizers. Introverts find extroverts.
Is that opposites attract?
Yeah. Yeah. They just find each other. Y'all can't relate to that, can you?
No.
I didn't think so. Not at all. But we know that once these two come together to form this, it forms it for a while, and then it splits apart. We're going to see that. So there's mutual interlocking growth opportunities, and their initial attraction later turns into something else. So their attraction grows, their positive feelings grow, they're ignited, these feelings, whenever they're together. In fact, one can just be thinking of the other. Boom. And all the light bulbs just go off. Boom, bam, bam, bam. So the natural hormones, because there is a biochemical element to this, a PEA, phenylethylamine, dopamine, norepinephrine are released. The primal regions of the brains light up. The more it lights up, the more in love they experience. Each feels energized. This is a real thing. Aroused, elated. And they intensely focus on each other. Each enjoy this feeling, and here's what's so important. It creates a self-reward reciprocating cycle between two people. Does this make sense? They each invest in the good experience. One doesn't just throw cold water on it and say, phew, with that, I'm done with that. This is nuts. They don't do that. They both collude. They experience more oneness than separateness. I mean, people in this state of mind are really fun to be with. They have no differences. They have no irritations. I mean, I try to find them. What does one of you like potato salad with mustard and the other like potato salad with mayonnaise? No, they say, we just love it, just show whatever he wants. Okay, it's great. Good. Well, I mean, do y'all just kind of see the world differently? No, and if we do, he's just so cute when he does that. It's just so merged. It's amazing. There's no separateness. In fact, the challenge of doing pre-marriage counseling with couples who are in love is they have a two-choice dilemma. And I have to explain the two-choice dilemma. Because they're sitting there saying, I really want to learn about this person. I want to see if this is a good fit. At the same time, I don't want to learn too much because it's going to interrupt all my good feelings. So, hey, show me enough that I can find it to be cute, but not too much that was going to burst my bubble. And I just have to say, wait, time out. How many, I say, are already engaged? The ones that are already engaged, I got to get them out. Because this is just marriage prep. The ones that are not engaged, I'm going to say, you don't have a ring. We're going to do some critical look and burst your bubble. We need to see if this is the real investment here. Now, the ones that already made a commitment, you got a ring, you got a date, you're hopeless. This is just marriage prep. You're on the journey. It's going to throw you in the pot. See you later. Come back when you have some struggles. For some, that's right after the honeymoon. So each selectively present only the good parts of themselves. You know, I tell them their marketing departments are working overtime. Right? I mean, they got that marketing department. I mean, you're not going to find out any bad stuff on these. You know, you can look and look and look and look. You can't find it. They're hiding it, right? Selective presentation is the goal so as to be found attractive. Each collude into this activity. All right? Both of them are doing this. Each person becomes idealistic, distorted, idealistically. Do you know what that means? They only see the good. They have rose-colored glasses. Each use one part of this person, just one part, and they take it and they magnify the 10% into 90%. You're just so funny, awesome, vibrant, dynamic. They take one part and they just magnify it, and then they take any weakness and they minimize it down to 1%. This is an amazing process. Look at 8 and 9 carefully. Please. The drive towards romance and attachment deactivates the regions of the brain associated with negative emotions. Assessing social situations and deactivates the parts of the brain designed to map out other people's intentions and emotions. Did you hear that? You're susceptible to being conned. And you're loving it. Now, do you know what con is short for? A con man. You know what con is short for? That's right. Rick said it.
Convince.
Close. Confidence man. He builds confidence. You trust him, him or her. It's instant confidence and trust. Oh my gosh. But the regions of your brain are being deactivated to assess what's real and what's a con. Notice number 9. Romance and attachment deactivate social judgment and negative emotions to glue you to a partner through a brain reward, self-reward circuitry. To glue you and bond you. This is why writers with wisdom have called romantic love a socially sanctified psychosis. What were you thinking? Oh, I wasn't. Right. Is that powerful? Okay, we're going to take a break, but hang on. This is just for fun because it's just for fun. Here we go. Oh, hang on. I don't want that. We've already heard that. Here we go. Okay, so here's the end of the country song, What a Sweet Addiction. Right? But the next one is perfect. It's a beautiful mess. Right? Now this is teenage angst. I want you to know I'm addicted to you. I can't. But I want it. I need it. Now it's over. I'm never. You want a bet? Anybody a betting man? Okay, the next one. You know the next one. Ah, you're the drug, you're the object. You produce all the good feelings and the all-time. Can you see the video? Robert Palmer. You'd like to think you're immune to this. Oh no, you're not immune to this. Okay. You get the idea. All right. Now, this is a powerful, 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 euphoric experience. It's real. I'm not against it. We have to understand it, work with it. It's not sustainable. It's time limited. It has a specific purpose in our life. It provides intense foundation for desire, but that foundation is not sustainable. Now, some people quest this. They go from person to person to person to person because they're in love with the intense feeling of being in love. They're not in love with the other person. They're in love with objects that bring the intense feeling. Okay? Okay, take a break. Get some coffee, a couple of cookies, and we will come back. Okay, round two. Would you agree with me on some observations? Would you agree that falling in love is not the same as love or loving another person? Okay. Some people would hold that the act of falling in love has nothing to do with love at all. I'm not that purist. It's a form of love. It's a powerful experience. I just don't want to stay stuck in it. Falling in love is by design a temporary experience. Thus, on the contrary, falling out of love is the beginning of the work of love. Okay? That's the truth. What people call falling out of love. Well, you fell into it. That's pretty passive, isn't it? I didn't do anything. I just was walking down the street and fell into the ditch. Oh, my gosh. Now I got to fall out of the ditch. Well, that takes effort. Well, I'm not doing that. Oh, I see. You see, love takes an extension of oneself. I do not like the phrase, because I know what people mean by it, and it's a self-justification. I love you, but I'm not in love with you. Well, duh. I mean, come on. I don't like the contrast of those two things because it's used as an indictment, a self-justification. You can love in your heart. You can be attracted to somebody. Falling in love is an act of regression. It involves passivity. You fell. I have how many people say, I wasn't looking for it? Well, of course you weren't looking for it. It's a collapse of personal boundaries, resulting in a lack of separateness and a lack of personal identity. You merge with the other person. Now you're going to see long-term relationships require separateness. Not merging. Requires separateness. Falling in love is a passive experience. It eventually means I love the feelings I feel when I'm with you. I'm not so sure I love with you. I'm in love with you. I'm not sure I love you. I love the powerful feelings you produce in me. I'm in love with that. Keep them coming. Now the day you don't keep them coming, I'm not so sure I want to be with you. You irritate me. Falling in love gives up the self, while love requires the growth of a self. It requires being a self, a separate self. It requires it. You're going to see it in a minute more. Falling in love is dependent upon a reflected sense of self, borrowed functioning, and other valid dependence, which is a segue, because I wrote it. Fun.
What about love as it relates to acts of love, obedience to love, doing acts of kindness and love when you don't feel like it?
Well, that's love. Just because one doesn't have feelings. Feelings are a personal experience, which we all respect. Love does not have to always be motivated by personal good feelings. Love is a commitment to the well-being of the other person, and in fact, to extend ourselves in growth is usually an anxiety-producing experience, to which the other person then usually accuses us of saying something like, well, you don't act like you really want to do this, but I'm doing it. It's not natural for me. I'm not congruent with it yet. Yes, it's difficult to love you because you're so not me. So I'm supposed to stretch and grow into a new way of being, and which produces anxiety because it's not my way, but I'm doing it because I love you. Then I get busted because, well, you don't actually act like you because you want to do it. Well, I'm doing it. I want to do it because I'm doing it. Are you going to bust my subjective experience? Well, you have to act like you like it. Look, the first time you do anything, it's not an easy experience. Now, the more you do it, it can become second nature, and you can actually say, I like this. It's more me. But it took 100 of those times. Acts of love are very important. They're stretching for the other person's well-being. It doesn't come natural. All right? So, now, this is very important. This is very, very super, super important. And I've got the rest of our time together to show you the foundation that produces romantic, powerful love, which is fine. But you've got to see this is very important in the natural course, life course development of human beings. There's nothing wrong about this. But I've got to describe it to you because we all have to make a shift. You must make this shift to grow up. If you don't, you're stuck in Peter Pan syndrome and you're in Never Never Land with the lost boys and girls. Okay? The first self that we develop, we are designed to develop, is a reflected sense of self. As children, infants and children, adolescents and young adults, we are gaining a sense of who we are. How? Is it innately born into us?
No.
It's acquired. From what sources do I learn about myself? Yes. Important people in my life. Brothers, sisters, parents, aunts, uncles, grandparents, teachers, coaches, significant people, parents being primary at the very heart and core. So when parents are cooing over this child and this child is fixating on the face, it is acquiring an inner mental map of who they are by looking at your face. This is why babies and infants will make eye contact and search for your voice. They look intently at you because they're building an inner construct of the world of who they are. They are merged. They are not separate. They're merged. But they will grow separate as they learn and acquire an inner mental map of who they are by reflections that they get from us. Make sense? Can you see that? So I want you to see, we are the mirror giving this infant, child, young adolescent, young adult, a reflection of who they are by how we respond and treat them and talk to them. They're acquiring, whether they're valuable, worthwhile, lovely, beautiful, attractive, from a reflection they are getting from us. That's what is meant as a reflected sense of self. We internalize how others see us and treat us. In object relations theory and psychology, that's called an introjection. The baby, the child, is introjecting, pulling inside a mental image of mommy, caregiver, parents, and self. They're learning to carry that around like a teddy bear to soothe them. This is what attachment theory is all about, is acquiring an inner, secure image of self through a reflection. Later, when we get into a relationship, something similar is going on. We borrow our sense of self from the person we are attracted to and them to us. So here's what's going on. See the little flowers? Isn't that cute? So this is the female. Tricia, just hold that right there. Thank you very much. Now, Tricia and I like each other. I think she's fabulous. She thinks I'm fabulous. Now, here's what's going on. One of the reasons I think she's fabulous is when I relate to her, she is mirroring back to me what? Yes. She's mirroring back to me all the positive attributes I already want to believe about myself. Correct? Now, she's wonderful, talented, gifted, attractive, beautiful, charming, so I deem her a person of great significance. She's lit up all my neural pathways. Boom, I think she's awesome. Now, she's a person of significance. All the rest of you aren't. You're relatively important in my life, but you're not that important. She's super duper important because she lit up all my neural pathways. You get it? Now, because she's lit up my neural pathways, and I think she's awesome, incredible, wonderful, when she smiles back at me, what am I seeing? Yes, all the good things about me. She likes me. Oh my gosh! Unbelievable! This wonderful, beautiful object, incredible, awesome, 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 is treating me nicely and affirming my reflected sense of self. Now, she's not yet pointing out my cracks in the reflected sense of self, is she? She's not saying, come on, you're irritating me. Oh my gosh, please stop doing that. She's not doing that. So she sees me the way I see me, and she's affirming it. I'm in love with that. Oh my gosh, I love that. What's she getting from me? Yes. This is why in romantic love, it is not certain that I love her or she loves me. I'm still in love with the reflection she's giving to me. She's a beautiful woman on my arm. Oh my gosh, when I'm walking around, everybody goes, whoa, how did he get her? And I'm going, so think of a reflected sense of self and borrowed functioning. I'm borrowing my functioning from the reflection she's given me. It's like she has a balloon, and when she reflects back to me, my inflated reflected self is like a balloon, and she blows it up. I feel good. When she deflates it and doesn't ping back the reflection, I get deflated. Does that make sense? It feels euphoric when she blows up the balloon. Feels euphoric. She likes me. Oh my gosh. It feels terrible when it's deflated and she's gone and I'm abandoned because I've borrowed my functioning from her. It's like my feel good is tied to the stock market. When my investments are up, I'm up. I've never felt greater. When it's down, I've lost everything because I can't get the reflection back from her. Now, when she stops giving me the reflection, what do I naturally do? That's right. I go to her and I talk to her about my needs. Isn't that sweet? Doesn't that just enhance desire in everybody? You're not meeting my needs. You need to affirm me. You need to smile when I come in. You know, you used to laugh when I came in. You know, with the waiter at Bennigan's, you were talking more to the waiter than you were talking with me. Your eyes lit up. You were chit-chatty. Have you ever talked to that waiter before? You act like you have. You were laughing more then than you were laughing with me. What's up?
I didn't notice.
You didn't notice? That is the problem. We need to talk about this. How could you not notice? Do you know you're killing me? You're killing me. Do you know, do you destroy my ego? She needs to try harder. So reflected sense of self pumps up romantic love. But after a while, it doesn't pump it up, does it? It's destined not to last. So later, when we get into a relationship, we borrow our sense of self from the person that we're attracted to. When inflated, we look and act better, but both the donor and the borrower get weary.
But are each one of them a borrower and a donor at the same time?
No, they can switch.
But in the relationship initially, you're both a borrower and a donor.
It's both going.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's a transaction. Now sometimes it gets out of balance. And the borrower is pulling off the donor. So I need you to believe in me. Right? And I just love this one. It's just so sweet. You need to be the wind beneath my wings. I just can't take Bette Midler. I'm sorry. You're just the wind beneath my wings. You're the air that blows up my balloon. You're the water that floats my boat. Now, initially, this is a compliment, right? Initially, the donor takes it as a compliment, correct?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I'm the greatest thing since sliced bread. After a while, how's the donor feeling? Free? Smothered. And the moment there's a shift, somebody's going to feel it. Then you're going to have desperation.
Hey,
yeah. Say it again.
I have a quick question on that borrower-donor transferal. So I've noticed throughout, I'll be like, oh, I'm so in love with you, you're not at my level. And then it'll be 2 months later, the other person will be like, I'm so in love. And it seems like this deeper crossing of one being more in love with the other saying that, and the other one saying, I'm not at that level. Is that
so they're not in sync.
Not in sync.
Yes, Russell, that's a dynamic that I'm going to call. One is smart enough to know, I know you want me and need me, so I'm just going to be here just enough that you want me and need me, and I don't have to invest back, because you're going to want me and need me and want me. And the other person finally gets tired of it because you're not investing back. And they shift. What do they shift to? I'm not going to want and need you. I'm going to go the other direction. Right when that happens, what does this person do? I want you. Don't go away. Where did you go? Oh my gosh, I was thinking about you all day long. I wanted to ask you out. I've been looking at rings. Then when the other one comes back, just enough, the other one goes away and says, I want to be wanted. I don't want to want. And they go back and forth. They go back and forth. Make sense? So emotional fusion occurs when each person is regulating their own emotions and their reflected sense of self through the interactions with their partner rather than handling them internally. Emotional fusion is a thick glue, a thick invisible glue, viscosity, that binds people together even when they're thousands of miles apart geographically. Because in their ego inside, they need the reflection and good vibes from the other. They're both dependent. That's called emotional fusion. It's a lack of separateness. Okay? It's fusion. So, they're regulating their own internals externally, each with the other. Once the relationship becomes their self-soothing mechanism, they're no longer free to be in a relationship. They're needy and dependent, and they need their supply. Follow me? That's emotional fusion. Emotional fusion occurs whenever partners depend on each other for their positive, reflected sense of self.
It's not when you dismiss them, right? If you're just missing them?
No, you can be missing them because you feel abandoned and your supply is gone.
But what if you're just missing them?
Well, that's from a different position of maturity. You can miss somebody, but you can't miss somebody when you need them. You can't love somebody when you need them, require them. When they are your stabilizing force in your life, it's not love. It's dependency. It's not even codependency. I'm so tired of that word. It is dependency. Call it what it is. It will produce love-hate. It will torment your life. Okay? Now, what happens when we are dependent on the other person for our reflection? Listen to this. When we are that dependent on the other person for our feel-good feelings and are drawing it from them and they with us, you have to get good at mind mapping. Mind mapping means I'm observing intently the other person, watching their actions, reactions, and behaviors to mind map them because I need to predict their movements so I can get my good feelings from them. I'm mapping, what does this mean? Why did you say that? Why did you react that way? I'm mapping you. Dig, 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 dig. I'm RoboCop. Zip, 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 zip. Zip, 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 zip. No. Zip, 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 zip. Because I need to mind map you to predict, because I got to know the move you're going to make so I can position myself so that I can get my feel good from you and all my good feelings and other validation from you, because I can't do it on my own. Follow me? So mind mapping means I need to get my reflected sense of self from you to make sure that I look good to get your approval. The more and better I can mind map you, I have to be able to do this so I can influence, control, manipulate, so I can position myself. One day you will mind map me back and oppose me because you don't want to subject yourself to my tyranny. You figured out I'm mind mapping. You'll counter me now to not subject to my control and manipulation. You'll get tired of it. When this happens, everything is going right. It can't go on this way. It was never designed to go on this way. We were designed for interdependence, which requires separateness. If I'm glued to the person, I'm dependent. You can't have a healthy interdependent relationship and need them and draw yourself from them at the same time. It's got to blow up. People have to blow up and have big fights to gain separateness. But then they come back together and do the dance again. Then they blow up. Then they come back together and do the dance. This is my everyday life with my couples. I live in this. It's okay. They have fights. One storms out, slams the door, goes to walk in the parking lot. The other one looks out the window and says, he'll be back. And I go, okay, I'm good. Emotional fusion occurs whenever partners depend on each other for a positive reflected sense. Notice the word, depend. I don't mind you affirming and validating each other. Depend is the operative word. I don't mind giving validation, affirmation. I don't mind you receiving it. Depend on it is another story. Borrowed function and emotional fusion are powerful forms of relatedness, and this is why when one person may show up at the courthouse to get divorced or gain custody, the other person shows up with a gun, shoots them and themselves too. That's emotional fusion. It's not love. You know, when Montel Williams interviewed O.J. Simpson, telephone interview, he said, "Did you kill Nicole?" O.J.'s exact words were, "If I did, it was because I loved her too much." I assure you, it was emotional fusion. It's a powerful form of relatedness. It's not love. Love requires separateness. Make sense? Emotional fusion is equal to Siamese twins. They're joined at the hip, because they're both dependent on their reflected sense of self. One move one person makes upsets the other's balance. Because there's a thick connection and emotional entanglement, any move or lack of from one partner impacts the other. That's why when I help one partner in a relationship break this up, I only need one. I don't need both of them in my office. Because the other one says, "I don't want to go." And then the other one says, "Well, if we're going to get better, I have to bring my spouse or partner in here." I say, "No, you don't. They'll dumb you down the rest of your life." Did you follow that? Every time you say, "Honey, let's go to therapy," they'll go, "No, I'm too busy." And then you'll go, "Well, I guess for both of us to get better, we both got to go. So I'll just dumb down to you." You just acceded to a terrorist waving a gun. I tell people, you come. When I help that one person make a difference, I guarantee you the other person feels it because they're mind mapping all the time and they're sensing the other one's getting more independent. They feel threatened and they go, so why are you feeling so good? What'd the therapist say? Who is this person? To which I always say, they're always welcome here. They're welcome anytime. Well, what did you all talk about? Isn't that interesting? Because they're sensing if somebody grows up and breaks the balance. There's a thick connection. The problem is not that you're too close. People say, "Well, we're just too close." No. The problem is they're each too dependent upon the other for their emotional balance. They can't stand on their own two feet. Make sense?
Uh-huh.
One of the two people go first?
Yeah.
Always. Never do they skip down the sidewalk holding hands going, "Let's differentiate at the same time. I think I want to grow and break this up." Don't you? "Yes, I do. I was thinking that just the other night." No, usually the other one protests. What'd the therapist say? "Why did you go? Well, you're acting all different." It's a big threat. It always is a sequence. The problem is not being too close. When all you have is a reflected sense of self, you have no choice but to attach to somebody else. The only way you're going to get out of this relationship is another raft has to float alone, right? So you can switch off one raft and get immediately into another. It's the only way, because you can't stand on your own 2 feet. You're not really a separate individual. You're gaining all of your reflection back from another person, so you need another person so you can get out of this one. You're just transferring one dependence to another. Make sense?
Like heroin.
Yes.
I mean, you can't function.
That's right. Sure. That's right. It's that powerful.
Yeah.
It's not going to be solved just by telling couples you're emotionally fused. They'll live this out. It's tenacious. You can rescue people and they'll go right back to the relationship.
Like the devil they know is...
That's right. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Emotional fusion now becomes a necessity, a way of being. So... let's wrap it up. This is a quote. You don't have this quote. I'm sorry. "It eventually became obvious to me," Edward Friedman, "that the universal problem for all partnerships, marital or otherwise, even business, is not one of getting closer. There is the urge to merge. Rather, the universal problem is preserving self while in a close relationship, which produces interdependence and maturity, something no one made of flesh and blood seems to do very well. I eventually came to define my marriage counseling as trying to help people separate so they would not have to separate." You understand that? This is my job. I help people grow up into significant relationships so they don't have to blow up. They've got to produce an interdependent, not a dependent relationship. It's the work of life and growth. So we bring our reflected sense of self into marriage because it got us there. Everything's going right, people. It got you there. Marriage, however, is an ecosystem that is a pressure cooker designed to help us become adults by making our reflected sense of self incredibly vulnerable and finally unsustainable and untenable. You can't maintain it. Try. So marriage is designed to kill the foundation that brought you together. Destroy it. Does marriage kill desire? Yes. It kills the foundation. But we got to produce a new one. I didn't say it killed it forever. It's designed to kill the foundation that originally brought you in. That's life. It's growing you up to make you free and to make you a lover and to really experience joy. We just have a hard time realizing it. The foundation of a reflected sense of self begins to fail. Boundaries snap back into place. You're no longer one, now you're two. As time passes, I tell all of my couples, the attraction glue which began the relationship cannot sustain it. It's going right. To which then we say, I will forever cherish my original misconceptions of you. You know, remember that 5x7 I fell in love with? You know, all the images I projected onto you that I was in love with? I wasn't in love with you. I was in love with all my projections onto you. I will forever cherish my original misconceptions of you. I'm not sure I'm liking you. So each partner now comes in contact with the gap between their own projected image, their fantasy, the one that was going to complete them, and now the true image of who their partner really is. Ugh. Power struggles begin, each attempting to influence, correct, to change the other. That's how they try to solve it. The foundation for attraction and desire begin to crumble. The roller coaster of up and down emotions eventually motivates us to grow a more solid self. I can't do this anymore. I can't stand it. I'm in torment. Got it? We're driven to develop and preserve a sense of self. That's why it's a foundation for desire. Preserving and maintaining a sense of self in relationship profoundly impacts sexual desire, emotional functioning, and connection with your partner. It's time to make the shift. You got it? Isn't this fun? Having a great time. All right. Now, Read, and I will get the link right. I will double check it. Sorry for my technophobia there, my faux pas. Read the chapter that I just posted today under Class 2 called Sexual Desire, Who Wants to Want? Because it's going to reinforce what I told you tonight. And it's brilliant. Sexual desire. Who wants to want? Nobody. Everybody wants to be wanted. Nobody wants to want. Because you got to grow up to want. Got it? Now, see you next week. And we're going to focus on personal growth and male sexuality. Fire away.
So I kind of understand the negative picture of, you know, all these things we do incorrectly, but like the lady at the front mentioned about missing someone, but it could be healthy.
Oh, yes.
Or somebody, you know, helping their partner and giving them
absolutely
in a very positive way. How does one tell when
it's
being done in a healthy and just normal
yes
way that we could sort of like model it and say, wow, that's really good. Like,
yeah.
How do you know, how can you tell when that's occurring versus you're just part of this predictable spiral downwards?
Great question. I'm going to give you a very brief, short answer as a telltale marker. My brief answer is going to be, many times we can tell from whence our behavior, the motive, arises. That is, we can tell the motivation in our heart when we don't get the expected return. Does that make sense?
No.
When you do nice things for somebody and they ignore you, what do you feel? Okay, if you felt rejected, I guess you had a deeper motive inside that said, I'm going to love you and I'm going to get a good feel-good back from you. I didn't get it!
So then what?
Well, it purified your motives. Guess what you found out? Did you do it for them or did you do it for you? Yeah. Now, I know it's complex. I'm not saying they're in opposition to each other, but I want to see the intensity. If you call somebody up because, you know, I'm just thinking of you and want to see how you're doing, and they go, oh my gosh, I can't talk to you right now. Let me call you back. And you go, I can't believe they did that. Then I'm going to say, I'm not sure why you did what you did. You thought it was altruism. I think it was narcissism. So there's a telltale sign because it's about freedom. Now, that's a short answer. I'll give you a longer answer next time because the longer answer involves this, and I know we got to quit. Please forgive me. Here's high differentiation. Here's low differentiation. Here's the markers of low. Here's the markers of high that I'll go over next week. The same behavior can arise from high differentiation and it can arise from low differentiation. The same behavior can arise from a weak self, low differentiated, or high differentiated. You can kiss somebody out of an act of love, of differentiation, you can kiss them out of neediness and dependence. Same behavior.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So now we're getting more complex. Yeah. What's the motive out of which it arises? If I help you build the categories, you can answer the question, why did I just do that? Yeah. From whence did it arise in me? This is very adult. Becoming an adult involves complex thinking. Not all or nothing. Sometimes it can be a little bit of both. But we're going to talk about that next week. Okay, see you. Thank you for being patient. Have a great week.